You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
If you've listened to this podcast before, you know fundraiser mindset is a big thing for me and the attitude that we bring to our fundraising. And I suppose the impact that that can have in how successful we are as a fundraiser. I've always said, like, a lot of the clients that I deal with, very often our meetings turn into almost therapy sessions in terms of talking to them about how they approach it, having to deal with their managers, and just really the negative stuff that weighs on them. And so on today's podcast, I'm very lucky to have a guest who is all about fundraiser mindset, who writes some really good stuff about this, puts some great resources out there, and it's just an all-round, what, know-it-all about fundraising? Nah, I don't know. But what I have today, who I have today with me is Jenny Mitchell. Hello, Jenny.
Hey, Simon.
How are you today?
I'm good. I'm delighted to be here to talk about mindset. Yeah, it's a big part of my life, both personally and professionally, actually.
I can imagine. And where are you based? You're over in Canada?
That's correct. I am in Ottawa, Canada. So for those of you that haven't done your Canadian geography, think of me as a cousin of Toronto, just a little bit east of Toronto or a little bit west of Montreal.
And how cold is it there at the moment?
Oh, it's freezing, Simon. I'm looking out the window. It was minus 22 without the wind chill this morning.
So, Celsius.
Yes, that's correct.
Oh my God. I can't even imagine that.
So I bundled up, took the dogs to the park, and my toes are just warming up as we speak now.
Okay. Well, you're good to join me. Thank you. And your job title is an interesting one. You're Chief Visionary Officer.
That's correct. That Chief is me.
And what does that involve? It's your company.
It's my company. And you could also add Chief Bottle Washer, Chief Marketing Communications. Chief project manager, chief, there's a lot of those. But I wanted to put that title, actually, I thought long and hard about that. And I wanted people to know that my company believed in vision and being bold, and that this was a little bit different way of doing fundraising. And as you alluded to earlier, that idea of addressing mindset, and I would actually say the flip side of that is isolation that many fundraisers feel. And you talked about therapy sessions, 100%. I believe you can know about Case for Support, you can know the best practices for major gifts, all that stuff, write a great fundraising plan. But man, you've got to have tenacity, resilience, and a really strong mindset to succeed.
So you deal with a lot of people who work in-house in charities, and do you find them like in lonely positions or feeling isolated, surrounded by people who don't understand fundraising?
Yep, I do. And I find it whether you're in a shop of 29 fundraisers or a shop of one fundraiser. And I think that I've been trying to analyze, why does that happen, right? So it's you can see it when you think of CEOs or EDs, because they're at the top of the food chain. There's no one to talk to. So there's automatically an isolation that happens, right? I think the other place it happens is if you're in a smaller shop, you're a development coordinator trying to make change from the bottom up, right, Simon? And that too is also very isolating. And I'll actually even go one step further and say that I built my business around the premise that the people are the solution in the not-for-profits. In other words, I used to write reports. I'm sure you do lots of them, assessments, audits, revenue generation planning, and I'd hand over the report, and they would say thank you very much, and it would sit in a shelf, because it wasn't actually the document they needed. It was the culture shift, the mindset, the tenacity, they couldn't make the change from an outside consultant's perspective. Hence, that's where I believe that the staff are our biggest untapped resource in not-for-profits, helping them lead professionally, successfully, and with a fundraising approach.
And do you mean the fundraising stuff, or do you mean all the stuff?
Well, of course, we believe in all the staff being involved in fundraising. Yeah. It probably starts with the fundraising staff. Often when they get to me, I like to call myself a fundraising coach, because by the time they get to me, there's a little bit of Eeyore. Why bother? Nothing changes anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They know what they're supposed to do, but it's almost like they've started to be absorbed by the Borg, right?
Yeah.
They're starting to, right? You know, I'm using my Star Trek. Yeah, I can talk Trekkie.
Okay, yeah.
And so I think that having that support of reminder of best practices, I also do a lot of peer coaching because I find that's another great way to help them support each other. Mm-hmm. And I just find it's a way more powerful way to teach and educate about fundraising, full stop. That mindset comes from support, so mm-hmm. being supported.
Tell me about like the bigger fundraising departments because I find that interesting. You know, it's really kind of obvious when a fundraiser is the only fundraiser why they feel lonely because they're dealing with people who know nothing about fundraising, you know, maybe people who hate fundraising. But when you're a fundraiser in a fundraising department surrounded by fundraisers, why are you feeling isolated there?
Well, let's talk about silos. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about fiefdoms. Let's talk about don't touch my donor list. Let's talk about metrics. Let's talk about moves, the way you're being tracked or performance reviewed, which mm-hmm. automatically from folks sometimes that don't understand about fundraising, even in the big shops, there's some challenges. I'm not saying metrics are perfect, Simon, because I believe strongly that what gets measured gets done, full mm-hmm. stop. Mm-hmm. However, to create an atmosphere or a kind of workspace where there's a collaboration between fundraisers, there's an openness to try new things, to whether it's plan giving with major gifts, whether it's event-based folks with major gifts, that openness in those big shops is mm-hmm. It's difficult to manage. It has to come from the top. And again, it's that mindset, that tenacity to believe in the work that you're doing and to be able to be resilient, try new things and experience new things. So I actually find it's rampant in the biggest question, the biggest thing I get from folks who are directors of developments in big shops is how do I motivate my team? How do I inspire my team? That's their number one question.
Yeah. And what's your answer?
Well, a couple of things. I think that we do a crappy job of sharing our failures in this world, in this department. We do a crappy job of knowledge transferring. A lot of our work gets done behind closed doors, right? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So it's a tricky thing to mentor young people because often those senior meetings, they've done all the prep for it, let's call it. They don't actually get to attend. So I'm a big believer in authentic leadership. I know that's almost become a catchword, and I've certainly heard lots of my wonderful fundraising colleagues talk about it. But if you can show up as a human leader, I think that's one of the ways to not only create trust with your team, but say, hey, I tried this today. This flopped and burned. This is what happened. Also, the idea of working together on strategies. We do not spend enough time coaching and mentoring. I use the example of the sales world. I've gone down a funnel here, but let me finish this thought. The sales world has this really interesting mentoring approach where a senior salesperson and a junior salesperson will meet. Junior salesperson has an upcoming strategy meeting or whatever with a client. They discuss the approach, mm-hmm. sends them off, and the meeting happens, and then they come back and debrief with the senior salesperson. And I mm-hmm. just think that idea of case study, real life experience, doesn't only grow the junior person, but in my opinion, grows the senior person. Why doesn't it happen in our shops? Because our bosses are all caught up on our bottom lines and want us just to get to whatever that number is. And the time for mentorship and growth and professional growth, whether you're looking at our amounts allocated to budget or whether you're looking at time allocated, is just not enough.
Yeah.
To grow our teams, expand our teams.
And why is that? That's a problem in the nonprofit sector. Is it another case of us as nonprofits always trying to pull it back to the bare bones because we feel like any amount of time spent on debriefing, any amount of time spent on strategies and stuff like that feels like we're taking food from the poor? Is that the case?
Fascinating. So let me take this in two parts. I think, I'm wading into the whole, I think at the end of the day, one of the things we struggle with is we're always spending donors' money.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
I think we're going to have to own that one. And we're going to have to be able to know, I like to think of that as rather than spending donors' money, we're investing donors' money.
Yeah.
And so if I can know that by investing my time in something for a longer return on investment, a better return on investment, we know the longer the conversation, the larger the gift, whether it's the more time spent on an annual giving strategy, the larger the success, right? When we throw annual giving campaigns together in a short amount of time, expect a short amount of return. I'm going to slide into a little bit around time management, because that was another topic we wanted to touch on today. And let's use the example of that mentorship experience that I just talked about. I like to think of four big quadrants in for every activity I do, and I do this for my business as well. And there's Stephen Covey's Highly Effective. You'll recognize them. Things that bring in money, right? So that's like grant applications, appeal letters, things like that. Things that will bring in money, right? Conversations with key board members, perhaps prospecting research, you know, cultivation meetings, etc. Things that have to happen to keep the lights on, which are things like paying the bills, tax receipts, all that. Probably some board meetings. then finally, there's time sucks, right? And you can think about what your time sucks are. It might be YouTube. It might be, you know, volunteer meetings gone awry. It might be meetings in general. That's one I get from everybody. So going back to the mentoring experience, it's not a bring in money. It's a will bring in money.
Yeah.
And that is the leadership quadrant. In my opinion, that's the one that we are failing miserably at. Strategic.
I mean, do you find this as a coach, as a mentor, it's almost a hard sell sometimes, because the person who then has to get approval from finance or approval from their board, they see it as a cost. What was that fourth quadrant?
A time suck.
A time suck, as opposed to an investment, because it's hard to measure the return on it.
So as far as approach for, let's just use it as professional development, because I'm sure everyone listening to your podcast has professional development budgets that they have to fight for every year, right?
Just to clarify, nobody listens to this podcast.
We're talking in our bathtub, are we?
Yeah, here? Yeah, pretty much.
So let's just generalize it to professional development. And I think that what people need to start to think about is, by attending that Congress, by hiring that coach, by hiring someone to do our strategic plan, by getting my skills, by getting my CFRE, what kind of return on investment can I expect? So instead of thinking of it as just a cost, and I would actually challenge everyone listening to this podcast to think about how they can best position, because I think we're guilty here too, Simon. Oh, they're never going to approve that. It's too expensive.
Yeah.
Right? That's that money mindset thing we were talking about.
Yeah.
And here's where the tenacity comes in is, you know what? They may not approve it the first time, but they might approve it the second, third, or fourth time. And isn't it our responsibility to bring to our boards and to bring to our bosses what's most important?
Yeah. Right?
It's not our job to decide for them. Like, we can't control what they're going to say, Simon.
Yeah.
But I do think that as professionals, teaching best practices up the food chain, up the hierarchy, is actually part of our job.
Yeah, that makes sense. So when you're brought on board as a mentor, as a coach, you know, whatever way you're positioned in that, what are the themes that you're seeing? I mean, I presume across clients the same problems come up.
Yep.
What's the big one? Is it time management? Is that a big thing for people?
Actually, I would say that's really high on the list. I'm going to share with you. So it's kind of like, you all of you listening know what your job description looks like, and then the actuality of what you do, right?
Yeah.
And I have a wonderful colleague that has this expression. Sometimes, Jenny, you just got to pick up the washing machine, right? Mm. And that's that wild goose chase that happens in your office on Tuesday morning because somebody calls for XYZ and you just got to do it, Simon. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's just own that one. That's part of our job descriptions.
Yeah.
But I like to think of it as if you were to encapsulate what good fundraisers need to touch every week, think of it as six buckets. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you got bucket number one. And I say this with no hesitation, revenue has to be your number one bucket. If you are not doing activities that touch that upper quadrant, that bring in revenue, you will not hit your targets. So revenue,
That's so refreshing to hear, because, you know, you hear consultants sometimes, or, you know, inspirational speakers, and they're like, you know, values and emotions, and it's like they almost don't want to mention money. And it's like, well, I mean, that's all well and good, but you're not going to be in your job very long unless you acknowledge that that's our role, is to bring in money. So that's nice and refreshing to hear you say that revenue's in there.
It has to be first.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. And if you're not comfortable with it, get a coach to talk about money mindset, or get out of the profession. I would actually be that blunt.
Yeah.
because you're not doing anyone a service. And often I find, you talked about what trends do I see? If the money's not coming in, there's some kind of an excuse putting foot forward. And I also believe that leadership begins with within. So we can blame the system, we can blame the database, we can blame the prospect list, we can blame a lot of things, okay? But at the end of the day, it's our job to raise money or to bring up the issues that will help us raise money with our leadership teams.
Okay. So revenue. That's bucket one, revenue,
The second one is people. And I actually use that in a broad term to mean board people, staff people, and personal connections. So having basic job descriptions, having basic roles, understanding how the team works, all that lovely HR stuff has to be there in place. You've got to be able to be touching those people that work with you. The third one is communications. And I have a little expression that says your words are your truth. So the way you talk about yourself is the way people perceive you. If you talk about yourself as a small, local nonprofit charity that, you know, asks desperately for your dollars every year, that's what you will get, is desperate dollars. So how you talk about yourself is incredibly important, and you need to be touching that bucket of communications. I would say weekly. I'd say these six you have to be touching weekly. So revenue, people, communications, focus. Simon.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Focus. Yeah. So that's strategically triaging everything that crosses your desk. And this is hard. This is discipline. You as a small business owner, you can totally, you're smiling at me here. This is, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, because I'm afraid you're going to expose me as someone who is completely unfocused. Are you a focused person? I mean, you run your business. Can you focus?
I have become much more focused, and a couple of my tools have been some planning tools, some goal setting tools. So I'll just take a quick little dive, and then we'll go back to our buckets.
Yeah,
I have this tool, and you don't need to buy it or anything like that. It's just a piece of paper that has three buckets across the top. Those are my three strategic goals for the quarter. So obviously the first one's going to be revenue. I still don't get away from it, Simon. Right? In my fundraising shop. And then I have two other options. It might be strategic planning. It might be a rolling out a new cultivation or a stewardship plan. And each week I need to pick an activity that ties into that goal. Now, it could be something as simple as, let's do the stewardship. I want to roll out a new stewardship plan. It could just be compile a list of all donors in the $100 to $1,000 list. But I get to check that off my list, right? So that there's always movement in those files. Often I see people that have these big goals, but they can't chew on them because they're so massive, they're daunting. So I'm a big believer in breaking them into little baby pieces to make yourself feel successful.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like you're very much about practical. This is what you do. I mean, you have your big dreams and plans and strategies, but if you don't have the next step you do this week, then it's pointless. And that seems to be part of where you get your success from, is actually doing it.
Yeah, it totally does it. Let me give another example. And is like, so I need a really good treasurer, right? Remember your succession planning, you need a good treasurer. Well, if June is your AGM, the action item is talk to your friends, find out some good accountants that you can have a coffee date with. You don't have to have 10 coffee dates, but you need to have one.
Yeah.
Right? So I find that by prioritizing things that way, that sounds achievable, right?
Yeah. That sounds very doable. I like that. Okay.
So revenue, people, communications, focus.
Focus, which we went off tangent on.
We did, didn't we? Love it. All right. Last two are tough. Okay.
Okay.
In the sense that they're not, all the top stuff is touchy-feely, people-focused, messaging, all that good stuff, right?
Yeah.
Infrastructure.
Me. Oh, God. Okay.
The I word.
Yeah.
So and if your database sucks, you can have the best board, the best fundraising board, the best beautiful case for support, right?
Yeah.
If you can't track it, you're out of lunch. So your infrastructure. And I think I say good reporting informs today and tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's what. Nice. And the last one is reporting. So you've got to find some kind of I have clients who are reporting ad nauseum. I have clients that aren't reporting at all. I have clients who haven't defined what metrics they need to report on. I talk about bare minimums is one of my big things. Because, we'd all like one touch reporting and the accounting to just spit it out for us. Right, Simon?
Yeah.
And that is our goal, but we need some basic metrics that I believe in. One of the ones I think we don't track enough is things like ROI, fundraising ROI.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, actually breaking down the different pieces of the ways we raise money and showing the numbers. Again, shame on us for not showing what's most effective to our volunteer boards.
Yeah, I mean, that's really surprising when it's, you know, not to say that we're all about money, but that's why fundraising exists, is to bring in the money. And the amount of organizations that don't measure the ROI is shocking sometimes.
Yeah. It's a fine balance, that whole dance that we have, between money and relationships and targets. And
yeah.
I'd be curious your thoughts on this one too, but I guess the way I've reconciled it in my head is when I'm with donors and with people, it's number one is the relationship, right? Uh-huh. And building that connection and understanding passions and what people truly care about as far as like core values. That's meaningful connection. But when I'm in my office as a fundraiser, I'm allowed to think of them as spreadsheets and prospects. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And it's a really uncomfortable position for us to be in. And some people really struggle with it because, you know, a few people have said it before that it's like fundraising is an art and a science. And so you have that beautiful, emotional, passionate human communication side of it. And you need that, and that's all well and good. And you know, I don't remember meeting anyone in the sector that isn't a, you know, doesn't have that burning thing within them to make the world a better place. But then off the back of that, if you're not doing the numbers, if you're not doing the spreadsheets, and you know, if you don't have not dollar signs in your eyes, but if you don't see that side of it, then you're not a fundraiser. You're a dreamer, you know. And so it's a really hard balance, which I think some people struggle, and I know I've struggled with it, because I find myself running training sometime and you're talking to it, and then suddenly you realize, shit, I look like a salesman, you know, I'm dressed like a salesman, I'm talking like a salesman, but I really care about the work that we're all doing, and that's why I'm talking like this. So it's an uncomfortable position we're on in, isn't it, like in the middle somewhere.
And I find that just using that word mindset, If you're listening to this and you're thinking, the money part I don't like, I don't enjoy, or whatever, I would encourage you to think about your money mindset. And I do a lot of work with this with my clients, because it's probably not them, it's probably you. In other words, understanding your relationship with money, if you think of money as a partner in your life or as a barrier in your life, the way you grew up talking about money and your values around money, which you don't even necessarily, know overtly. These are, right? These are values that are so intrinsic. They were ingrained in you before you were 5 years old. Yeah. Your son, Simon, probably has strong views about money already, for example, right?
Yes. Yes. He tells me them all the time.
Exactly. But all this to say that we need to do this to get over ourselves in some ways, because it's got nothing to do with our money values, right? Mm. It's got to do with how the donor wants to change the world or what kind of impact they want to make. And the money is actually the tool. But it's taken me many long years to get to that point of saying that. And I'm an alchemist. That's one of my, I've done these money archetypes as part of the training that I do with my coaching. Mm. And basically that means that I have a love-hate relationship with money. Short
story. Yeah. I mean, I'd kind of like to see money eradicated, and you know, if we smash capitalism, like that, there's a big there. But in the meantime, we're living and operating in a system which is all about money and driven by money. And again, that's that difficult cross section that we as nonprofits sit in. Is, you know, we're surrounded by people who are incentivized, surrounded by people who are told every day, you know, to succeed you have to earn a lot. And then on the flip side of it, we're asking people to give not for no good reason, but for not necessarily a tangible reason. Mm-hmm. And that's a really challenging place to sit, I think. That's why some of us struggle with it, I think.
Well, using an example, I say, you know, the coach purse people, they can email me how many times a week? Nordstrom. I'm in a Nordstrom fetish right now. So Nordstrom, I don't know if you guys know that in the UK. It's like an American.
Explain it to those of us here.
Nordstrom is a higher end boutique store that's from the States, has now come into Canada. Mm-hmm. And I love their stuff. I try not to go in. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
But you know, they're allowed to email me many, many times with stuff, and it's great and it's fine. I can choose to open it or not. And yet so many of our fundraising staff are challenged with our communications people to send out 3 appeals a year, right?
Yeah.
So my response is always like, if Nordstrom can come in my email box and ask me to invest and spend money on them, what's so wrong with us coming into their inbox and inviting them to be a part of something special to change the world?
Yeah, well, it's I mean, the example I've used before in a blog is KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken. And it's like when I go in and buy KFC, it tastes so amazing. And they, you know, and they ask me to upgrade my meal every single time. And I never get offended. And I almost always say yes, because it tastes so good, you know, and it's like, you know, the work we're doing is much more important than KFC, but maybe it doesn't taste quite as good. And if we could make it, you know, more, you know, if we have a better relationship with people, if people love us the way they love 11 Herbs and Spices, then you can ask every day and you can actually communicate with them every day. So it's not, I don't think it's not quite as simple as, you know, this is the right amount of times you can communicate. It depends what you're saying and it depends what the relationship is. And I think a lot of nonprofits haven't hit that right, correct messaging yet.
And the messaging has to be key. And, you know, the other one of my pet peeves is the donor fatigue conversation.
Yes.
Because it's a, you know, if they're fatigued, they're not fatigued from hearing from you. They're fatigued because you haven't told them what you did with their money last time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah, and
I agree. Like there's people like Jen Love, Canadian friend of the podcast, Jen Love. She's done a few posts on that donor fatigue doesn't exist. And I totally agree. I totally agree with that, you know, and her point is that if, you know, that it's like a relationship where if your partner says to you, do you know, you're just not, you know, you're just not showing me any love and you're just not being nice to me and I just think we should break up. It's like to blame that on them.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what we're doing with donor fatigue. It's the donor's fault that they're bored of us. It's like, no, just be more interesting. Be more interesting and keep them.
And don't be afraid to be sincere.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I just see people hiding behind things in our sector, you know, just go those places, be bold enough to talk about, you know, rather than talking about your suiting program, talk about the confidence that suiting program brings to a woman, right?
Yeah.
Rather than talking about the number of bags of dog food you need, talk about the dog who hasn't eaten in 7 days and what it looks like to watch him eat for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, go there, please.
I think it all ties together everything we're saying in terms of, you know, that it is almost like a confidence thing that we have isolated fundraisers who are walking that thin line between money and you know, love, I suppose.
Yeah.
And so it's good to see coaches, mentors like you who are going in and sometimes that's what people need, is they just need that person behind them or next to them who encourages them as a fundraiser to like you said, to be bold. And that seems to be where the successes come from when people push through that.
But, and if you're listening to this and you're thinking of, okay, this was a great conversation, but what now? Here's a challenge. Can I give him a challenge, Simon?
Yes, please do.
Okay. All day today, whatever time you're listening to this podcast, can you look at each of your tasks when you hit them and ask yourself, is this bring in money, will bring in money, activities to keep the lights on, or a time suck? Mm-hmm. And by that sheer filter, I would suggest that you will change which activities you do today.
Mm-hmm.
Those will move you forward much faster. Okay, be late on your payroll, Simon. Be late on your insurance, blah, blah, blah. But don't be late with your follow-up with your donors or your grant applications.
Nice. I like it. So if people want to get more and more of these nuggets of wisdom from you, I love those four quadrants. I love your six buckets. And you're continually putting out stuff and sharing resources with people, which I find really helpful. Where can people find you, Jenny?
All right. So my company name is Chavender, and I'll tell you that Chavender is a fish that lives off the east coast of Canada.
Of course, your company is called
a fish. Because I'm a fish, because I'm a Pisces, and there's lots more, but that would be podcast number two, Simon.
Yeah.
And when you think of this fish, what I love about it is it's adaptable. It can live in salt water, fresh water, you know, shallow, murky water, which is a great analogy for charities and not-for-profits. Yeah, so I tell you this because Chavender is spelt like lavender.
Okay.
Except a CH at the beginning. So Chavender.com is my website.
Chavender.com.
And I was trying to think of some resources I could share. I have one on 21 conversations. So opening meaningful conversations is a theme of my work. How do we get people to really connect? And I commend you for this kind of conversation. I believe in this kind of dialogue. And so I've written a bunch of questions that people can work with donors on. And that's chavender.com/ 21-conversation. So that might also be a place to start to learn more about what I do. And you can certainly join my blog there as well.
Can you think of any off the top of your head? Give us an example of a great conversation starter.
I'm so inspired by the way you give back to your community. Tell me, who taught you that?
Oh, I like that. I like that. Tell me who taught you that. Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Where did you learn that?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I just find the thing I find people don't do it. I like to do, and maybe this is just Jenny. I use myself as an example a lot, Simon. So I say, in my experience, blah blah blah. How have you found that? And I find that going personal yourself is another great way to open people, help people.
Yeah, well, the more kind of open you are, the more vulnerable you make yourself, the more people come in to you. I think, mm-hmm. or the more people let you in when they see you opening yourself. I'm a big believer in that. Yeah, that's cool. Too. All right, so chavender.com, lots of resources on there, including your 21 questions. Are you a social media hound? Do you hang out?
I'm a social media hound. You can catch me on Twitter, at Jenny Chavender. You can find me on LinkedIn as well, for sure. And happy to have conversations on those two platforms. You can always email me too, jenny@chavender.com.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. Thanks so much, Jenny. Thanks for being so open and sharing all that. And we'll chuck a few links in the description below if anyone wants to follow through that. But I would say, do follow Jenny's stuff. Do reach out to her. She is fantastic.
Thanks
for putting the time aside for me. And enjoy your -20-degree weather over in sunny Ottawa.
I will, for sure. Thanks again for the opportunity.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't, whatever, you're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hello, this is Morgan Freeman. For discounts on Simon's best-selling online fundraising courses, go to www.changefundraising.com/training and use coupon code podcast. Complete them in your own time, wherever you want. Get busy living or get busy buying.